Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathleen O, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, January 16th, 2020, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 83, the second paragraph, which begins with, "The spiritual life is not." We'll be reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are Stacy T., who will be reading the 12 Steps, Laura R. for the 12 Traditions, and the readers of our text are Robin P., Dion R., and Leslie M. The share ID for Wednesday, January 15th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 13,977, 13977. And for this morning's January 16th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 13,981, 13981. Our newcomer greeter for today is Penny C., and Robin P. will be making the announcements. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Stacy T. to read the 12 steps, please.
Good morning. This is Stacy T., recovering compulsive overeater in Cleveland, Ohio. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thanks for letting me do service.
Thank you, Stacy T. Laura R., would you read the 12 traditions, please?
Yes, great. Thank you so much. This is Laura R., grateful recovering compulsive overeater in Greeley, Colorado. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for your service in the past.
And thank you, Laura R. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 83, the second paragraph that begins with "the spiritual life is not." And Robin P., if you could get us started, please. Good morning.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thank you so much. I'm Robin P. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Vero Beach, Florida. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to...
Point of order. That's a complete crock of shit.
Oh, darn. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual family principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Others against them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. I totally relate to this. And, I am so grateful because, as some of you know, I was married for 11 years and my husband and I got divorced. And we both really missed each other for a year. And on Christmas Eve, he invited me to go to church with him. And I went and I heard God say, "Merry Christmas. This is my gift to both of you." And we started dating and we got remarried during the wildfires last year in 2018 in Los Angeles, which was a whole nother story. But we both got into recovery during that year. I got in first, actually, and he got into another program. And, you know, it's this miracle of living the spiritual principles. I've been abstinent for 4 years by God's grace, and it's like one day at a time. It's not talking incessantly about spiritual matters, except for when it flows naturally, you know, and it's such a blessing because we've both come such a long way and we have such a mutual way to talk now. And when it says this will change in time, they will change in time, we have both changed in time. And it is through our behavior. It's really, you know, I can say anything, but it's my behavior that matters. You know, and I've become a different person and I have tools now and I have ways to communicate now. It's such a miracle. It's literally the best gift I've ever been given in this lifetime is this gift of recovery. I'm eternally grateful. And some of my behavior, you know, with the food and everything, just, you know, living in the character defects of selfishness, self-seeking, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, you know, that's not a lot of fun to live around. And now I have tools and I get to keep practicing. But you know, someone could look at my past behavior and go, "Wow, you know, wow, I'm going to follow her." You know, and the miracle is when I live this, I don't just talk about it, but I live it. Then that's how I influence people. And people literally, you know, I was not the person that people would come up to and say, "Wow, you're such a positive spirit. Wow, you're so amazing. What do you do?" It's recovery in action. it's God living his principles through me, you know, and I'm so grateful. And people do come up to me and say, wow, you're such a positive person, you're so much light. And I promise you, they did not say that to me when I was in the disease. This is recovery, and it's living it. So I hope that I got a little distracted at the beginning. So God bless everybody in your recovery. Thank you all so much. I pray that we all have a very abstinent, blessed day. Thanks so much.
And thank you, Robin P., and for your grace in that little glitch there. Okay, who else would like to share on this paragraph? We're on page 83, the second paragraph that begins with "the spiritual life is not."
Roz G.
Sherry K. B.
Miles G.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay, who came after Roz G?
Stacy J.
Stacy J. And then I got Sherry K. B.
Donna B.
Donna B.
Malky G.
Is it Malky?
Yeah.
And G is in George?
Yep.
Okay, great. And I can take one more. All right, well then let's stop there. Okay, I have Roz G, Stacy J, Cherry KB, Donna B, and Malky G. So go ahead, Roz G.
Okay, I hope I'm unmuted now.
You are.
Okay. Good morning. I'm Roz G, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles, California, where the birthday party is coming to town. But, okay. Ooh. This, I can relate this paragraph to so many specific areas in my life where I was, you know, so self-centered and so self-absorbed that I didn't really think about how other people were being impacted, how other people felt, what other people were going through, because it was all about me, myself, and I. And this morning, as I was listening to the previous meeting, the early meeting, and I could so identify with a family member that a lot of her life was a complete, like, vapor. It was like gone. My youngest sister is gay, and I grew up in a religious family, and, you know, in the early 60s and 70s, you know, we just didn't know, we didn't get it, we didn't understand anything about it, and I really just dismissed her. I was unkind to her, I dismissed her, and there were several years of her life that I was totally absent for, and as time evolved and as acceptance and tolerance of other people's lifestyles evolved in my thinking, in my way of being, in my heart, I'm going to use the word repented of the way that I treated her and anybody, you know, all people of all lifestyles. And now, you know, I had to apologize. Of course, I had to sit face to face with my sister and tell her I'm in a 12-step program. I come from a selfish and self-centered. And I don't even need to tell you that. You know that. And instead of telling her and talking incessantly about my 12-step program and my spiritual work and my writing, I practice the principles. Last year, I went to go and see her. I went to visit her. This year, I sent her and her partner a Christmas card with Starbucks gift cards, wishing them a wonderful Christmas, calling and asking her, how is, you know, her name? How is she doing? How are you guys doing? Asking, making sure that they know that they're welcome to come and stay with me, living it, not just talking it, because money talks and BS walks. That's a joke, but I mean, it's just BS if I'm not living out those actions. And they are in so many other ways in my life, with my children, with my mother, my sister. But today I wanted to share particularly on my little sister, who I love and adore and accept with my whole heart. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Roz G. Okay, Stacy J., it is your turn, and you'll be followed by Sherry KB.
Thank you. This is Stacy J., recovered food addict in Toronto. This is such a prominent paragraph for me right now, especially that first line that the spiritual life is not a theory. When I was actively in my food addiction and in my earlier life, I hated that phrase, faith without works is dead, because I just wanted to claim a spiritual attitude without having to do any kind of work about it. And to me, this sentence kind of says that as well. You know, the spiritual life, I don't have the luxury anymore of claiming to be spiritual without taking any actions to back that up. And as someone who I had recovery and then I rested on my laurels and failed to develop my spiritual life and then relapsed for about 9 years or something, a terrible period of relapse. I now have 4 months of recovery and abstinence. And I realize, because I recently found a food starting to be exciting. And I realized that the spiritual life and this recovery are not a theory. When I say I'm recovered, I could just sort of cling to that word without acting on it. And so for me, that sentence means I can't put any food before my higher power and my spiritual life. So if that food has to go, it goes, and I give it up gratefully in order to have a connection with my higher power. And I see what happens for me is when I put something before my spiritual life, like a food that becomes exciting, I become irritable pretty quickly. And then my family and my loved ones and my work and everything is impacted by the irritability, which I think is kind of my soul being irritable at starting to be distanced from my higher power and the direction of my higher power. This is such a resonant paragraph for me about the ongoing work that I need to do to stay in connection with my higher power and the ongoing willingness to surrender everything that comes before, you know, that threatens to kind of get between me and my higher power. And that's it. So I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Stacy J. Okay, Sherry KB, you're up next, followed by Donna B.
Good morning, Kathleen O. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. And thanks so much for your service, Kathleen O, and steering us today and Team Thursday. And welcome, newcomers. And glad everybody's on the line today. Good to be here. We were reading this last night at our meeting, and our group kind of, in a way, got into a discussion about the spiritual life. What did that mean? And, for me, it's being connected to my higher power and letting my higher power be my guide from here on out instead of running the series show. And it's giving me the example of how to live my life on the previous paragraph. It's telling me, you know, that I need to have patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love towards people, even the ones that are most difficult for me, and that, you know, I have to live it. I'm not just walk the walk, but talk the talk. I mean, walk the walk. Hello. And I just know that in the most important place that I can practice that is in my home with my loved ones and out in the different parts of my life. And so I know that I have to demonstrate rather than talk all about it. I have to live it. I have to walk it. I have to be an example of it. And what jumps out at me here this morning also is that when it says that that we urge you, you should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters, I think, you know, for me, I was always trying to get my point across to my loved ones about anything that I wanted to get my point across to. And that goes for all of it to me, that I don't need to talk incessantly about trying to talk somebody into doing something or that they should be doing this work or how they should be doing it or anything like that. All I can do is be an example with my higher power's help guiding me and directing me. I know how important that is. Also, that my behavior demonstrates it. I have some family members that have just now started talking to me about recovery. And it blew my mind. I just had a conversation with my brother yesterday who was into his own disease and that belongs in another fellowship that, you know, he started asking me questions about our family and how he noticed that how different I am around things with our family. And so I'm not talking incessantly about it. I'm letting him ask me the questions rather than me just jump in and try to do everything, which I've always done in the past. And I know that's with God's help. And each day I get to travel this spiritual path by living it and asking God to show me the next right thought, the next right action. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry KB. Okay, Donna B., you are up next, followed by Malky G.
Good morning. This is Donna B., recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, calling from Denver. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. That is such a powerful sentence to be read in a book, but it's also an extremely powerful sentiment to exhibit in my life. I am, like many people, I feel like this week I've just heard so many shares about how challenging it is to bring the principles of this program into my family, into the home that I live in, and into the people that I love the most, into those relationships. And I am a person who's easily distracted. Not because I have an attention deficit disorder, but because it's just hard for me to be present. It's hard for me to be here with the people who need me the most. And I distract myself with mundane chores, and I distract myself with texting and being on phone calls with people in the rooms. And, you know, I can sit in my room every morning between prayer and meditation and then dialing into this call. I mean, that process can be an hour and a half between waking up and actually leaving my bedroom and interacting with my family members. And one of the commitments that I made in recovery was to get off of social media. There was a time in which for recovery, in the name of recovery, I was on Voxer and WhatsApp and this thing that was like a walkie-talkie, and it would make all these noises all the time on my phone. And my family has noticed that I have put those things down. My 12-and-a-half-year-old daughter, who herself has more self-regulation around social media and her cell phone, has thanked me for putting the damn phone down. And it wasn't because I made big promises. I was guided by my higher power and often still have to ask my higher power for help to put my phone down, to be present, to be available, to be in a posture in which my children and my husband feel comfortable approaching me. I enjoy Wow, that was fast. Thank you, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Donna B. Okay, just before we take Malky G, just a reminder, we're on page 83, the second paragraph that begins with "the spiritual life is not." And after Malky, I'll be taking some more names if you'd like to share this morning. So go ahead, please, Malky G.
Hi, good morning. Malky G from New Jersey. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. I really thought I was living it. Only just sitting in these rooms and working so hard, I'm wondering why I'm just not getting it and just still not having that happy, joyous, and free and serenity that I saw people having. It took me time to realize I did not know how to live this life. I knew how to talk it. I knew how to talk a lot. that's actually the only way I knew how to connect with spirituality. I talked my breath out. I talked till I chewed people's ears off. I would talk so much to my family members, giving over recovery just by talking it and wondering why am I just making them more confused and more miserable. I had no clue I was not living it. And that line is so powerful. Our behaviors will convince them more than our words. You know, the line I heard at the conference this year was so powerful, and it really resonated with me. It says, preach God, and when you need to, use some words. And that hit me so strong, and I'm just noticing, realizing, like, real subtle changes in my home. And also, and I realize I'm talking very little. I didn't even realize it, but as I'm doing this work and I'm working every day to live it, the higher power is changing me, and I don't even have that like desperate need to talk and convince. My higher power is sort of lifting that from me. I'm just focused every day living it, and that need to talk and control people and selling it to people is sort of being lifted by me little by little. And I see that even in my home group meetings. I see as my internal, and I'm living it, and my emotional frequency to me and my higher power is shifting. I'm watching how the people who I admired in the rooms are the ones who talked a lot, the long-term abstinence, the greatest speakers talking about their relationship and their spiritual awakening. I had no emotional frequency to feel, are they really living it? Are they real? I just fell for the glamour. They were the thinnest, they were the richest, they were the most successful, their recovery was the most miraculous. As I'm just getting quieter and more content by doing this work, those same people, the people who I'm attracted to, are shifting. I'm shifting much more to people who are living it, quiet, not flaunting it. And the more I'm shifting, I'm shifting to the message. My message is shifting, and I'm working more onto just living, stay middle, stay low-key, not flaunting. And this is not a person I could ever have been, because I lived with talking, flaunting, and controlling. This is not something I could ever do alone. And just one day at a time, my behaviors are slowly, slowly convincing, becoming more powerful than my words, and I'm grateful for that. Thanks for listening. I pass.
Thank you, Malky G. Okay, I'm going to open it up for some more names. Who else would like to share on page 83, the second paragraph?
Dion R.
Barbara E. Barbara E.
Pamela B.
Bruce
Kat
E.
K. Pamela, Bruce E.
Ramona A.
Now, Ramona A. Let's stop right there for now. Pamela, if you're still unmuted, what's the first initial of your last name? Okay, I'll get it when we get there then. Okay, so I think I have this right. Dion R, Barbara E, Kat K, Pamela, Bruce E, and Ramona A. So go ahead, please, Dion R.
Hi, and good morning. This is Dion R. Very grateful to be on the meeting this morning. And the spiritual life is not a theory. To my best recollection, I think that is so true. I know it's true. I was just looking at the paragraph, just glancing a little bit, the paragraph before, where it talks about their defects may be glaring, but the chances are their own actions are partly responsible. Oh my God, that still tells me if I want to be happy, joyous, and free, to stick to my side of the story and my clean my side, and look to my higher power and ask him how can I be patient, tolerant, helpful, loving, and being a living example. You guys gave so many good examples of how once we change, it's sometimes it's osmosis. Other people change around us. It could be neighbors, could be anyone change around when they see us not reacting to life or chaos, trauma, or even the happy thing, being overexcited, anything. When they watch me change, it's like
it just happens automatically. Be like, oh, you know, and it's more peaceful. You know, peace is a word I had no clue what it meant years ago. When I went to a recovery function, and it was so everybody was getting along and talking and, you know, having a wonderful time. But I kept saying something was missing. I could not put my finger in it. My loving highest, at the time it was my heart, but my loving sponsor at the time, I said, something here, I can't describe it. I've never really felt it before. It's just weird. You know, I'm thinking it's like wrong because I'm not binging or trying to hurt someone, you know, or chaos or rolling eyes or none of that. She said, honey, that's called peace. You know, and that's what the spiritual light gives me, peace. Through chaos, through good times, bad times. But the good times, I'm telling, like most recovered people know, that's been here a couple of days or so, I have more better days, in other words, than anything. As I used to say, my best day in using is, it can't even compare to my worst day, if I have a worst day, in recovery. And with that, I'll pass, and I just stay. Thank you, guys, for being on a part of this journey with me. And with that, I'll pass.
Bye. Thank you, Dion R. Okay, Barbara E., you're up next, followed by Kat K.
Good morning, everyone. It's Barbara E. in New Jersey. Thank you for allowing me this time. Well, I know our disease has three parts. Physical, mental, and spiritual. But I never understood the spiritual part. I came for a diet. Why did I need anything spiritual? But it says in the big book that the spiritual part of the puzzle is the deepest part and sometimes calls the root of our troubles, whether we're eating or not. And they're manifestations of being blocked off spiritually. How have I realize I've been blocked off? Do I often feel sad? Yes. Am I happy with the things that are going on in my current relationship with my nuclear family that I live with? No. Am I happy with who I am and how I act in a relationship? All good reasons to look for something spiritual to hang my hat on. What am I prey to misery and depression? Do I often wonder why I do what I know I shouldn't do and don't do what I know I should do? Do I often feel sorry for myself? All good reasons for looking deeper into the cause. Is my motto, what's in it for me? These are not things to be proud of. But I've changed over the two decades that I've been in OA. But unfortunately, my son does say to me, Mom, you're kinder to the people you speak to on the phone than you are to me at home. That's not something that makes me warm and fuzzy inside. I want to give to my family because if I can't be good and kind and generous and patient and loving and not opinionated in a harsh way with my family, then it's of no use to me at all. I picked on my poor husband last night because I'm so sick of the news shows he watched. And I made fun of him for it, one after the other, confirming his bias one way or the other. So he said to me, well, what about all the stupid doctor shows you watch? And I say, but they're fiction and they have different characters. So we got into a brouhaha. That's not the way I think things should be for me. I have to learn to be loving and giving and kind and understanding with my family as much as with anyone else in the community and in the program, so that I can be a better person slowly, imperfectly at best. Well, thank you so much. I pass. I look forward to the rest.
Thank you, Barbara E. Okay, Kat K., you're up next, followed by Pamela R. B.
Hi, Kat K. compulsive overeater. Man, I dialed in and heard the shares, and I was like, oh my gosh, I relate to this so much, which is, it's very easy for me to talk. I was always a good student, so it's always very, very easy for me to do an assignment or talk the talk. This program is simple but not easy, because it's easy for me to talk, but it's hard to actually live. And, you know, it's a spiritual progress, right? Every day, praying for guidance and help, that I can learn these skills to act with more compassion and treat my family as well as I treat my coworkers, or just even a cashier in a grocery store. It's what working a spiritual program and being spiritually and emotionally abstinent, that for me means not just with food, but it really means with technology and other things that can easily consume me. So I think the spiritual aspect and emotional abstinence and working towards spiritual progress is really, for me, the hardest with my family. And that's really where I think I need to gauge my spiritual progress, is by how I treat them. Because, yeah, that's just a really hard practice for me. And just because I'm in program and working this, there's no expectation that means they need to change. It's me that needs to change. And I can't judge them by the same standards I judge myself, which is a very harsh standard and what led me to eat over. So practicing patience and tolerance needs to be a daily code, and it needs to be a code that I practice kindness towards myself, but others, and that includes my family life. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Pamela R.B. Okay, Brucey, you are up next.
No, I'm Pamela R.B.
Oh, sorry, that was Cat K. I'm sorry, Pamela. Sorry, okay. That was Cat K. I was, thank you, Pamela. It's your turn. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you, and good morning, everybody, by way of L.A. So I'm here for the birthday party. Got in a little early, and I'm very grateful to be here. So I'm Pamela Burnett from Detroit. But, wow, what a passage, you know. I am good with theories. I love theories. I love for you to tell me how it all came about, how you work it, all of that, the history and all of that. I will soak it up like a sponge. But it's one thing to absorb the information, but it's another thing to be able to disseminate it in my life, in my walk. And, you know, often I had heard when I first came into the program that the longest walk in this program is the 18 inches between your head and your heart. And I think I'm on that journey where I'm just about there, where it is part of my everyday life today to live this program with the best of my willingness every day. You know, I'm here. I come here every 2 years for this party, and it's so amazing because I have stepchildren who live here. I've since divorced their father, but last night we had dinner together, and one of the things that my daughter said to me was, "Wow, you look amazing." She was just in awe, and I shared with her, you know, the program, and not only just the theory of it, but she said, I could see you actually living it. And what a good, you know, good example, because, you know, it says in the big book that people will see it long before you do. I mean, I see myself every day, so I was like, oh, okay, well, whatever. But it is something when you don't see people every day on those kind of, you know, on a day-to-day basis, and they give you that feedback. And my prayer today is that, you know, every morning before my feet hit the ground is to God to allow me to be an instrument, to be used in the way in which God sees fit, not the way Pamela sees fit. See, there are many things going on in life today, and oftentimes I think the best display of how I am is to just be. You know, I don't necessarily have to comment on anything. Today I can just sit in the room and be a gentle, quiet spirit to just observe what's happening and going on. And I'm very grateful to be there today. I don't have a need to say everything that's in my head. It's not that important today. So, except for when I get on the line and talk to you guys, so, because you get me. So thank you so much. And I hope to see everybody at the convention, or many of you at the convention. Look me up. I'm still in L.A. So thank you again. Have a good one.
Thank you, Pamela B. Okay, Brucey, you're up next, followed by Ramona A.
Well, I'm Brucey. I'm down in Florida, recovering down in Florida, Fort Myers area, Florida. The spiritual life is not a theory. Well, I was just thinking about, well, you know, what is a theory? Well, it's something, I guess, that, well, this is only my thought about it. Something somebody thinks up and sounds pretty good, and you know, you might follow it, you might not. But this is not a theory. You know, this is real. This is fact. And I can live something that's real or fact. And it goes on to say we have to live it. You know, you ought to live it 3 or 4 days a week. You ought to live it. You have to live it every day. I have to live this every day. That's a lot of work, you know, but I need to do that. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. Well, I love to talk to my 4 daughters about spiritual matters every day of the week. I would really love to. Let's see. So far, I've had 1 of the 4 tell me, how about backing off on the spiritual stuff? You know, so that's a pretty good indication that I shouldn't be, you know, and that was about maybe 6 months or a year ago. So I have, you know, I haven't, I don't, you know, I don't, until she expresses a desire, you know, then I can start maybe talking about it. I don't know, we'll have to see. So I'm not going to talk incessantly to her about them. And then I have 2 other daughters that have pretty much closed me off on spiritual matters. You know, I'd like them all to live by my script, right? My script is they ought to, you know, do my higher power and do all the stuff, you know, and everything, all the church stuff and all that. But it ain't happening right now. But maybe, you know. But it says here they will change in time. Yeah, in other words, I got to give them a little time, give them some room to grow and learn from their mistakes and stuff like that. And, man, I had to learn from mine. You know, I didn't have any kind of spiritual experience until I was 38. Okay, so our behavior will convince them more than our words. So now I'm just going out this afternoon with my wife, or even earlier than that, to do some important things, you know. And how am I going to live this thing out? Am I going to be with her and want her to read from my script and all that, and if she doesn't, be mad at her and try to control her and push her? Or am I willing to sit back, let go, let God, and have a spiritual experience today rather than have a Bruce experience, you know, rather than make this a Bruce E. show? Sit back and have this be a spiritual day with my wife. So that's about it for me. Thanks, everybody, and I pass.
Thank you, Brucey. Okay, Ramona A., it is your turn.
Hi, everyone. This is Ramona A. in Vermont, a beautiful snowy Vermont today, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I have to say, like someone else just said, that I love theory. I'm a person who loves ideas, and I could discuss that up and down and backwards for a long time, you know, with someone. But I could see that when I wanted something and somebody told me, well, that will take some work, like recovery. Well, the theory was fine, but the work was was more difficult. But I did get to a place where it was so painful that I did the work for recovery too. And I know the spiritual part of it is growing. It's, you know, there's not perfection, you know, there probably never will be. I'm not God and I'm never going to be. But I see that where before I would belittle and be angry at my husband, I now am patient and I wait and I try to, you know, bite my tongue and just listen. And the same thing with other people where I wanted to be the center of attention, you know, and make everybody laugh or talk a lot or whatever. Now I try to listen. I try to ask questions, you know, and these little things, I never would have thought they were spiritual before, you know, just courtesy. But I guess courtesy can be spiritual also. And even with, I have to say, even with God, that I wanted to tell God what to do, and I didn't trust. You know, it was, I did not trust, you know, due to experiences, et cetera, before. But those weren't, I have found out, those weren't God-inspired experiences, you know. And I'm learning to trust, you know, really, really trust. And people will see that, too, because I don't try to manipulate and control everybody and every situation. And at the same time, I know that there are a couple of, I have one niece in particular who seems like she would need this program, and she started it and then she left, you know, and it just seemed the food thing seemed too difficult. So I'm trying not to say anything as I watch her go up and down and wait and just be, you know, just be in the family. And she can see, you know, there's nothing as far as the physical part goes. And I hope that she can see in the spiritual and the active part too. That, okay, thanks so much. That the change, the spiritual change is moving along. So. Thank you, everyone, and I pass.
Thank you, Ramona A. We have time for about a 2-minute share. Would someone like to take that?
Hey, this is Reggie.
Oh, go ahead, Reggie. You have about 2 minutes. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning, everybody. What a beautiful, amazing paragraph and shares this morning. And, you know, to try to keep this brief, I am a person of words, but they seem to be eluding me lately. But this morning, this reminded me of so many things. Back when I studied the OA 12 and 12 when it first came out in 1990, and the last paragraph of Step 12 reads, "Those of us who live this program don't simply carry the message, we are the message." Now, I remember reading that, speaking it in front of a room at one point, and that's my, I loved the theory of it, the intellectual appeal. I was passionate about the message, but someone spoke earlier that longest distance is from the head to the heart, and I have always loved all of the messages, most of the messages anyway, in the big book and a lot of the ones in the OA 12 and 12 and a lot of other books, but you know, I it was very challenging for me to get the messages down into my heart, and it's only there from my heart that I can actually be the message and carry it forth, and I don't have to, you know, spout the words so much. I can just live it, and that my heart got pierced about a year and a half ago. It sort of changed the ground that I walked on, and that had never happened in my decades of living, and I'm very grateful for it and am actually kind of like still a newbie in learning, in my own learning and experience of living from that. But I like it, you know, I like it and I love being touched by you all. And I was by so many of the messages this morning, and look forward to seeing anyone who's going to be in town for the OALA birthday. I'll be there Friday and Saturday, and have a beautiful day, everyone.
Thank you, Reggie O. Okay, and thanks everyone for your wonderful shares this morning, and a special thanks to Team Thursday, Stacy T., Laura R., Robin P., Dion R., Leslie M., Penny C., and Robin P. We are now going to close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So, Dion R., would you please read a vision for you?
Yes, hi. This is Dion R., recovered compulsive overeater, very grateful. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if our own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God. As you understand God, admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.